Have you ever had technical problems with any technical device in your home? In this episode, you'll learn how to ask for technical help and complain politely in an email. Welcome to
Aprender Inglés with Reza and Craig.
Hello, I'm Craig.
And I'm Reza.
And if you're a new listener, welcome to the podcast. Reza and I are going to help you improve your English using all of our 45 years of teaching between us. How are you doing, Reza?
Pretty good, Craig. What about you?
Very well, thank you. It's been a good week. We're enjoying beautiful weather in sunny Valencia. Before we speak about how to communicate with a technical support team in English, and thank you to Mamin for that question, we have a voice message from Melina from Argentina, who asks us for some book recommendations for B2 intermediate level English. So here's Melina.
Hi, Reza and Craig. I'm Melina from Argentina. I wanted to thank you for your wonderful podcast. I'm always learning something new with each episode. I would like to ask for some books recommendation. I love to read, but I'm not sure which book is a good option for my English level. I read the Harry Potter books, the last three in their original language, and I love them. It was a challenge, but I understood everything with the help of a dictionary. I hope you can recommend me some good books. Thanks again.
So thanks very much for your message, Melina. Any comments about her voice message, Reza?
Well, first of all, well done, Melina. It's really good that you're reading books in the original version with a dictionary. It's difficult. Mm-hmm. And at B2 level, that's very commendable. You'll learn a lot. Well done.
Yep. And thinking that maybe there are more people listening who are readers and interested in improving their English by reading an original version. So for level B2, Melina said she's already read Harry Potter. So that kind of level of English. Well, we have a few recommendations that you might be interested in. What's the first one we've got on the list, Reza?
Well, a very popular book, which is quite good for your level B2, more or less, is The Magicians by Lev Grossman. It's the first book of a trilogy, first of a group of three. It's about an American boy from New York, and he finds a magical land.
So we've put that on the list, Melina, because that sounds similar to Harry Potter. So if you like that kind of genre, that kind of fiction, then maybe Americans in New York with magical lands might interest you. So that's the first one. The second one is a book I haven't read, but I have seen the TV interpretation of The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games was written by Suzanne Collins, and it speaks about a world after an apocalypse. So a post-apocalyptic world where children are fighting to the death until there's only one left. And that's a way that the government used to control the public. So there's underneath the fiction, there is quite a strong social message. I really enjoyed watching the films, the series on the TV. So I haven't read the books, but I would imagine if that is your thing, we could say in English, if that floats your boat, which means if that interests you, then you could try The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins.
Okay, well, so far we've had kind of fantasy, The Magicians. We've had sci-fi, science fiction, The Hunger Games. What about a bit more kind of old-fashioned fantasy and perhaps mixed with kind of children's stories, perhaps? Although adults can read them as well. Peter Pan.
Peter Pan, yeah.
Peter Pan, that's from, a long time ago. I think was Peter Pan written in the 19th century? I think it might have been the late 19th century.
Very possibly, yeah. It was written by J.M. Barrie, B-A-R-R-I-E. All of these books, by the way, are written in the show notes on our website at inglespodcast.com/177. So if you can't write down these books, but you're interested, go to the webpage when you get home or when you have time, and you can see all of these books in the show notes. So what's Peter Pan about?
Well, a lot of things happen, but basically the basic plot is that Peter loses his shadow, su sombra, shadow. So he has to go back to Wendy's house to get it. Mm-hmm. And he has many adventures on the way.
So this could be a nice book to read to your children, to get your children used to English, to listening to English. Read this story to your children in bed. It will help your English, and it will help your children to get their ears used to the music of the English language. The next book is a little bit heavier. It's a little bit more perhaps depressing, but it's a wonderful book. I have read this one.
Me too.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's called Angela's Ashes, and it's by Frank McCourt. What did you think of it, Reza?
I liked it, although there were bits of it which were a bit depressing.
Bit dark,
hard to read, thinking that it's based on real life, so it really happened. But, you know, it's a good book. It's well written.
And I think they also made a film based on this book too.
They did, and I've seen the film. The film's pretty good as well.
Yeah, actually. It is. Yeah. It's basically a memoir or a story remembered by an Irish American who spent his childhood in poverty. So if you're very poor, poverty is the noun, very poor life with an alcoholic father. So it's definitely not Peter Pan, but it is a different genre that may be interesting to some of you.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to leave you with the next one, Reza, because I know you're a fan.
Well, I read this book when I was quite young for the first time. I think it was about 11 or 12 years old. Animal Farm by George Orwell. I think in Spanish you call it Rebellion en la Granja. Animal Farm is the original title. And it's a satire, and it's related to things like the Russian Revolution and in the Stalin era. So it's kind of a metaphorical book. There are lots of descriptions or characters which could quite easily be compared to real life situations or characters of the Soviet Union. So it's a kind of politically, satirically based book, very critical of the Soviet Union. Not surprisingly, it was banned in the Soviet Union for many, many years.
What does banned mean?
Banned means prohibited. To ban is B-A-N. So it was prohibited. The Soviet Union didn't like it at all. And I believe it still is prohibited in a couple of countries. North Korea, not surprisingly, where they have a similar regime to this day, still prohibits that book. And don't you think, listeners, for me, the very fact that somebody tells you not to do something or read something makes me want to do it.
Yeah, so, of course. Yeah.
Just knowing that it's illegal somewhere, yeah, I'm going to read that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I read this many, many years ago, I did not recognize the connection with the Stalin era and the Russian Revolution. But I did notice that under the story, under the text, there was the definite social commentary of social hierarchies and how we interact and how we work in society at different levels. And I loved the book, and I think I definitely recommend anyone to try and read it. It's not, do you agree, it's not too difficult? You could understand it fairly easily at a superficial level.
Yep.
And then maybe you need to read it twice, the second time, to really get the message that's underneath the writing. And it's not very long. It's quite a short book, which is good.
It's easy to read. As I said before, I'm a big fan of George Orwell. I'm quite interested in writing in general. And George Orwell was obsessed with clear English. It was a big obsession of his. Writing clearly and getting rid of anything which is unnecessary. So as a learner of English, as a foreign language, for you that should make any Orwell book pretty easy to read.
The next book is maybe a little lighter, not so heavy. It's Bridget Jones' Diary by Helen Fielding. You may have seen the film, the first one. The first film's very good, Bridget Jones' Diary. It's basically an English woman who is tired of being single. It's very light. There's a lot of comedy in the book. And if you're interested in something not so heavy with not so much political commentary, then try reading Bridget Jones' Diary. That'll be very good for your English.
Not much political commentary, certainly, but plenty of social commentary in Bridget Jones' Diary.
And quite a bit of sex as well.
Oh, I haven't read it, I must say.
Neither have I, but there's a little bit of sex in it, I'm sure.
What was I going to say? Yes, there is a name for this kind of genre, or even subgenre. It's called chick lit. Chick lit.
Oh, I thought you were going to say romantic comedy.
No, well, maybe as a film, yeah. But yeah. When there's a book like that, chick lit, literature lit for chicks, chicas.
Okay.
Chick lit. Chick lit. Chick lit.
Sounds like chicklet. Life of Pi is the next one. What's that, Reza?
Now, I've seen the film, but I haven't read the book. It was written by Jan Martel, and it tells the story of a Tamil man, a Tamil, and the Tamils live in Sri Lanka and India, and he writes about his childhood experience of being in the sea on a boat for months with a Bengal tiger.
Among other animals, there are more animals, I think, in the boat too.
Yeah, and the film is incredibly spectacular to watch. Of course, he isn't really in the boat with a Bengal tiger in the film because I guess there was a danger of the tiger eating him. But it's quite realistically done. It looks believable in the film. Mm-hmm. But obviously, the idea is a bit fantastical. It's not based on real life, is it?
No, it's not. I read the book and before I saw the film, and I much preferred the book. I was a bit disappointed with the way the film... I think sometimes when you read fiction, you have images in your mind of the characters and how they behave and what they're like. And when you see a different person's perception or a different person's interpretation of the literature, and it's not the same as yours, I think you can get a bit disappointed. Mm-hmm. I much preferred the book. I definitely recommend it. And again, it's a book that for level B2 or C1, it's not a very difficult book to read. You may need to check some words in a dictionary, but I think you could quite easily understand most of the story without a dictionary. I think it's not a difficult text.
Now, it's very interesting, Craig, that you just mentioned the fact that you didn't really like the interpretation of the book when it was adapted for film. Mm. Because if there is one series of books which has been adapted in many, 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 many variations to the screen, it's the Sherlock Holmes book.
Oh, yeah.
Which is our next one. Sherlock Holmes, the story is written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I'm sure most of our listeners have heard of Sherlock Holmes. So you probably know their stories of the brilliant London detective, Sherlock Holmes, and his faithful colleague and friend, Dr. Watson, who narrates the stories. Are you a Sherlock Holmes fan?
I am. Yeah, I grew up as a child reading Sherlock Holmes, and I've always enjoyed the interpretations and reread the books as well. The English is now a little bit dated. You won't find the same kind of English written so long ago as, for example, Bridget Jones' Diary. They're written in different styles, but I think it's still very readable and understandable for English students. So yeah, definitely recommend the Sherlock Holmes series.
Yes, me too. I was brought up with them. And to this day, I cherish, to cherish is to have a lot of affection and a lot of appreciation for something. I cherish my hardback copy, duro, not
Capaduro.
Capaduro. My hardback copy, which my grandmother gave me when I was about 11 years old, and it was very old even then.
Did she used to read you the stories? You
no, no, that? She just gave me a hardback copy of the Sherlock Holmes stories, and I read them over and over again, and I have a lot of affection for that book.
Yeah, me too. I love Sherlock Holmes. So that should be enough, I think, for the time being for you to get on with. So thanks for your question, Melina, and happy reading. Please let us know what you think of these books, if and when you read them. Next, we have a voice message from Marcelo Fernandez from Argentina, who has a comment on the Argentinian flag.
Hello, Reza. Hello, Craig. You want to know why there is a sun on the Argentinian flag, don't you? Well, we were taught at school that the sun on the flag meant it was a war flag. After Googling it, I found out that the sun represents the Inca god Inti, and it was chosen by those living in America to show that they had separated from the Spaniards or the Spanish crown after the May Revolution in 1810. That's all I've been able to find so far. I hope it contributes to the podcast. Goodbye.
Well, thank you very much, Marcelo. That's very interesting information. I did not know that.
Me neither. That's no. Very fascinating. Fascinating.
One comment on Marcelo's pronunciation, which I thought was perfect. I really thought he had excellent pronunciation. And when he sent me the audio file, he asked me to check his pronunciation of separated. And yes, Marcelo, you said it absolutely perfectly. So no problems with anything there. Any comments, Reza?
That was fascinating for me because, as I've said before, I love flags. When I was a kid, I tried to memorize as many flags as I possibly could. And I'm game to challenge anybody to this day. I'm quite familiar with a lot of flags. But what I didn't know was the story behind the sun and the Argentinian flag. So that's very interesting for me.
Yep. Had you heard of the Sun of May? Because I hadn't. And when I checked on Wikipedia, it says the sun on the flag is called the Sun of May because it's a replica of an engraving. How do you say engraving? Algo que está...
grabación? Oh, no, sorry. Un grabado.
Yeah. Un grabado. It's a replica of an engraving, un grabado, on the first Argentine coin, which was approved in 1813, whose value was 8 escudos, which was $1 at the time. So that's from Wikipedia. Also, thanks to Marcos Forgiarini, who also answered the question. Thank you, Marcos. And he mentioned that the flag of Uruguay also has a sun for the same reason, which, of course, yeah, when he said that, I remembered that Uruguay also has a sun on their flag.
So there you go, Argentinians and Uruguayans. You have a lot in common, so stop fighting each other. And look at the good things you have in common. No, I know you love each other, really. It's a bit like the British and the Irish. It's a kind of a love-hate thing you've got there.
Absolutely.
Only joking.
Moving on, we have a voice message from our friend Mamin. And let's listen to Mamin's question this week.
Hi guys, this is Mamen again. Sorry, I know that I am a little pain in the neck, so sorry. And here I go, because I forgot to ask you if you can help me with one issue again. So here I go. Those last few days I've been working on a website. I have to purchase a template to my WordPress, and I have a lot of technical problems. So I had to write an email. And I've noticed that I have a lot of problems with my vocabulary, to be polite, to express myself correctly. And I wonder, maybe you could make a podcast about this topic. I don't know if you've done it before. I didn't remember. So maybe you could make one podcast about how to write an email about complaint or about to ask for help or to write to a technical team support or something like that. So I'd appreciate so much if you could do it. And I think this time is, I didn't forget anything. So a big hug and a big kiss. Have a wonderful summer. And that's all. Ciao.
No, Mamen, you're not a pain in the neck. You're not a pain anywhere. We love your questions, and it's always a pleasure to hear from you. So, hello. We did speak about emails in general and writing emails in general back in episode 93, Mamen. So if you go back to inglespodcast.com/93, that's in general. And we spoke specifically about how to start and finish emails. And something very important when you're writing an email to a person you do not know, you obviously want to be polite. So you need indirect questions. So we also suggest that you go and listen to episode 50 that we did with Nicola. And in that episode, we speak about how to make indirect questions, which will be very useful in your polite emails. Before we look at some expressions you could use specifically for complaining and asking for help, about your message, Mamin, you use the verb to purchase, which means to buy. It's actually more common in American English for you for saying to buy something, comprar. But the pronunciation wasn't correct. You stress the first syllable. So purchase. Make sure you stress the first part, purchase. Any other comments, Reza, on Mamin's message?
You used a good word. You used the word template, which some of our listeners may not know. Template is plantilla in this context. So that was a good use of the word template. By the way, Mamin, I empathize with you. I know exactly what you're talking about. Because in real life myself, I've been speaking a lot with a certain famous Spanish.
We can name them. We can name and shame them if you want.
No, I better not. I'd rather not.
Okay.
But I've been speaking a lot over the phone. When they finally bother to answer the phone and when they don't hang up on me, colgar, yeah, sometimes they hang up on me. You're speaking for about 5 seconds and it cuts after you spent 20 minutes trying to get through, but I won't bore you with the details. I've been speaking to them about getting a new decodifier for my television, and I've been using quite a lot of this language myself, and I must be honest, it's very boring and very frustrating, but it's necessary. Real life sometimes is boring and frustrating. And even for the boring and frustrating things, you need English, as well as the fun things as well. So, Mamin, I really empathize with what you've got to do now. Good luck to you. I'm sure it'll go well.
Yeah, I think we've all had problems dealing with help desks and technical support teams. And it's part of modern life's complexity and difficulty. Let's look first at how to complain politely in English. One expression you could use is this. Unfortunately, I was disappointed to discover that. And then you say what you were disappointed about. So you could say, unfortunately, I was disappointed to discover that the cable was missing from the box. Or I was disappointed to discover that when I plugged it in, it didn't work. To plug in is enchufar. So I plugged it in, it didn't work. I was disappointed to discover that the device didn't work, for example.
Unfortunately is a great word in this context. People write it and they also say it very often as a nice way of saying, unfortunately, blah, blah, blah. It's a nice way of saying, look, I'm a bit annoyed here.
Yeah.
But it sounds much nicer when you go, unfortunately. Or also to give bad news. Unfortunately, we were unable to solve your problem in the time given. It's a lovely, very British, polite way of beginning a sentence.
When you're writing your email, don't forget the comma after unfortunately. So unfortunately, comma, I was disappointed, etc.
Another useful phrase is, the issue I'm having is... Mamin correctly used the word issue herself.
Mm-hmm.
It's problema, asunto, tema.
It's a very nice word to use, issue, because it's not as strong as problem. Problem sounds very negative. So you could say issue or challenge.
Yes, challenge is a nice word because challenge is like, a challenge is something that you can overcome. So
yes,
it's positive.
You can do it. It's exciting. It's not as bad as a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the issue I'm having or the issue I'm facing is also possible.
Or you could say, I'm sorry to say that, for example, I'm sorry to say that despite my efforts, my router still fails to function properly, for example. I'm sorry to say that.
I'm sorry to say that your product does not work or something like that. All of these expressions, remember, can be read and seen in our show notes at inglespodcast.com/177. Another expression you could use to complain, there appears to be a problem here, or there seems to be a problem here. Mi parece que. There seems to be, there appears to be a problem here. So you're saying there's a problem, but you're using there appears to be or there seems to be to make it softer, to soften the complaint. So there appears to be something missing, there seems to be a mistake, etc.
The British particularly, but also the Americans, but particularly the British, we love to be indirect and polite. So even when it's absolutely obvious that there's a huge problem, you say, there appears to be a problem, even though we all know there's a big, big problem.
And we like to apologize before we complain. So we'd say something like, I'm sorry, but, or in the next example, I'm afraid, mi temo, I'm afraid I'm not happy with whatever. So I'm afraid I'm not happy with your service, or I'm afraid I'm not happy with this product.
And also to be polite, instead of saying your product is giving me a problem, that sounds a bit rude, a bit too abrupt. You say, I'm having problems with, as if it's, oh, stupid you that you haven't quite figured out how to use it yet. So you're automatically apologizing if it might be your fault that things aren't going well. I'm having problems with your product, for example.
Or as Reza might say, I'm having problems with my decoder, or I'm having problems with my router that you supplied me with.
I have said that quite a lot recently,
And using afraid again, finally, another example for complaining, I'm afraid to say. So I'm afraid to say that I'm having problems, or I'm afraid to say that I'd like a refund. I'm afraid to say that the instructions are not clear, etc.
So that's some useful stuff for complaining. Now, what about for asking for help? Well, as Craig mentioned earlier, it's good to use indirect questions. It's more polite, it's more formal. It's the most typical thing to do, particularly if it's written English. You could say, or you could write, could you please give me advice? Instead of just saying, give me advice, much nicer to say, could you please give me advice?
And then, of course, you could use a slightly longer expression with wondering. So I was wondering if you could. That's very polite. I was wondering if you could help me with an issue, or I was wondering if you could explain to me how this works. I was wondering if you could.
Another nice, polite way of beginning is, would it be possible for you to advise me on the best course of action, for example? Would it be possible for you to, or would you mind explaining, for example, would you mind explaining how I might get your product to function properly? Would you mind explaining?
Another way to ask for help, I'm a bit confused about. So I'm a bit confused about the functions on this phone, or I'm a bit confused about the process of connecting the device.
Or if you're confused, you could use a different word, clarify. You could say, could you please clarify the different functions on this device? Clarify is to make clear.
With clarify, I think you probably use how. So could you please clarify how I can or how I could use this device?
Another possibility is, I'm not sure how, and then you could have an infinitive. I'm not sure how to turn off the standby mode. Or you could have another verb. I'm not sure how the standby mode works, or something like that.
In my dad's case, I'm not sure how to turn it on. I'm not sure how to turn it off. Another expression, I would appreciate your help with. I would appreciate your help with. So you could say in an email, I would appreciate your help with setting up the device. Or I would appreciate your help with installing the application, etc.
Another useful expression if you're having a bit of trouble, if you're not sure what to do, is I'm having difficulty in, plus a gerund, ing. For example, I'm having difficulty in finding the standby mode again. I'm having difficulty in finding the standby mode. Or I can't seem to locate the button. I can't seem to. Or I can't manage to. Or I'm not able to. Plus infinitive. I can't seem to be able to turn on the device. I can't manage to lower the volume. I'm not able to plug in the jack leads.
Mm-hmm. And one final one, I'd be grateful for. So to be grateful for something. Using I would, so I would be grateful, or I'd be grateful for help with whatever the problem is.
Now, when you're going to be looking at technical vocabulary or guidance, there are certain expressions, certain words, which tend to repeat a lot in this type of situation. For example, a company might have their standard step-by-step guide. So rather than a person individually explaining it to you, they might refer you to a video clip or a manual or some internet page where you will find a step-by-step guide.
So step-by-step, paso a paso. So you could combine that with one of the phrases from asking for help and say, I was wondering if you could send me a step-by-step guide. Could you please send me a step-by-step guide, etc.?
So that step-by-step guide might take the form of an instructional video. That's a nice expression. An instructional video. A video with instructions. These days, I'm sure you know, on YouTube you can find instructional videos for just about anything you can think of. How to stick a piece of paper on another piece of paper. How to open a can of tuna.
How to record a podcast.
Yeah, yes, you really can find an instructional video on it. You really can.
But if you're like me and you're a little bit technically challenged, which means you don't find technology easy, maybe you need some hand-holding. Now, you may know the expression to hold someone's hand, but if you need some hand-holding, then you want somebody who knows better than you to help you and hold your hand to help you understand or do something. So in your email, you can say, or use this rather nice expression, I need some hand-holding with this problem, or I need some hand-holding to understand this process. So some hand-holding really means I need some help. Please help me. Another useful word for tech vocabulary, screenshots. Very often on blogs and tech websites with instructions to use things, you get screenshots, which are basically photographs of your computer screen. And these photographs explain step by step and give you step by step instructions on how to do something. So in your email, you could ask the company or the person to send you screenshots to understand something better. Could you send me a screenshot explaining how to do this? I'm afraid I don't understand. Would it be possible to send me some screenshots of this process? So we hope that's helped you a little bit. Mamen, let us know if it hasn't and if you'd like something a little more specific. And we're always happy to revisit this topic of emails, especially with technical problems. So now it's your turn to practice your English. Do you have a question for us, as Mamen did, or an idea perhaps for a future episode that we could speak about? Do you need to write emails in English for your job? And if you do write emails, what challenges are you facing? What issues are you having? Send us a voice message, and you can do that by going to SpeakPipe at speakpipe.com/inglespodcast, or send us an email with a comment or question to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to me, Reza, that's belfastreza@gmail.com.
And as usual this week, we'd like to thank our wonderful sponsors who are supporting us on Patreon for providing future transcriptions. And our sponsors are Nick, Pedro, Manuel, Maite, Lara, Maria, Sara Hanabo, Carlos, Zara Heath Picasso, Mamin, Juan, Cory, Mariel Reidemann, Jorge, Jimenez, Raúl, Rafael, Manuel, Agus, Manuel, Nestor García Mañez, who podcasts at nestorgm.com, Juan Carlos, Rafa, Beatriz, José, and Miren. Thank you very, very much.
And remember, all of you on the list that we've just read are Patreon sponsors. You can get the How to Pass a Job Interview MP3 and PDF free. That's free to all those who have signed up on the Patreon scheme. We'd also like to thank, as ever, Armanda.
You said think.
Sorry. We'd also like to thank, as ever, Arminda, Alberto, and Angelica Bello, who are continuing to transcribe our words into written transcriptions for everyone to read. As you may know, we already have episodes 131 to 142 transcribed, and also episodes 1 to 5 right from the beginning, which Angelica did. Thank you very much for your hard work to you three.
Thank you.
So, Craig, what have we got lined up on next week's episode?
Well, next week we have a surprise for everybody. We're going to speak about the difference between as and since, which a question we received from Nacho from Elche. And Nacho is also offering a surprise giveaway. So I'm saying no more. You have to listen next week to find out what Nacho is giving away. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.